This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello, this is Terry Malloy here to read the week. The best of U.S. and international media. This is the April 26, 2024 edition. All you need to know about everything that matters. On our cover this week, we have a picture of Donald Trump in the courtroom. The martyr. Is Trump's trial just a partisan persecution? Main stories this week vowing to strike back at Iran, Benjamin Netanyahu. Our briefing this week, will bird flu turn into a pandemic? And talking points, OJ's epic fall from grace. And I will begin with one of our cover stories, the Israeli plans retaliation after massive Iranian attack. What happened? The decades-long shadow war between Israel and Iran moved closer to open conflict this week after Tehran launched an unprecedented aerial assault on the Jewish state and Israel pledged to strike back. Iran aimed more than 300 drones and missiles at Israel in a coordinated five-hour attack. Tehran said the barrage was in response to an Israeli strike on an Iranian diplomatic compound in Syria that killed two senior Iranian military commanders. Most of the Iranian weapons were intercepted before reaching Israeli airspace with the help of the U.S., U.K., and Jordan. Israel's air defense destroyed almost all of the rest. The sole casualty was an Israeli Bedouin girl wounded by a falling debris. In a phone call with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, President Biden urged restraint over fears of counterstrike could spark a wider Middle East conflagration. You gotta win, take the win, Biden reportedly said, adding that the U.S. would not take part in offensive action against Iran. Netanyahu later told top Western diplomats that Israel would do everything necessary to defend itself and that we will make our own decisions. Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi warned that the slightest retaliation by Israel would be dealt with fiercely and severely. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said the U.S. was preparing new sanctions targeting Iran's missile and drone program, while British Foreign Secretary David Cameron urged other G7 nations to coordinate sanctions against Iran and show a united front. House Speaker Mike Johnson advanced a stalled foreign aid package for Israel, Ukraine, and other allies, in defiance of threats to his job from hard-right Republicans. Split into five PACs, the package mirrors a $95 billion aid bill that was passed by the Senate in February and opposed by many conservatives who argue the U.S. border should be secure before funding is sent to Ukraine. GOP Representatives Marjorie Taylor Greene and Thomas Massie pledged to push for Johnson's ouster as Speaker if he sought aid for Kiev. Biden said he swiftly signed the package into law if it passed, which would require Democrats to line up behind the aid deal. "We stand with our friends," the president said, "and we won't let Iran or Russia succeed." What the editorial said. Iran's attack was a powerful reminder that the Tehran regime remains the biggest threat to peace in the Middle East, said Bloomberg. As the risk of wider war snowballs, Israel's best path forward is resolve and restraint rather than military escalation. A retaliatory strike would cast Israel once again as the aggressor, jeopardizing international alliances that have already been strained by the war in Gaza. Israel's long-term security requires peaceful relations with its neighbors, including Palestinians, and containment of Iran, and the best way there is not lobbing missiles, but rigorous and assertive diplomacy. For the Biden administration to stand in the way of Israeli retaliation would be morally disgraceful and strategically inane, said the National Review. Iran has repeatedly attacked Israel through its Hamas and Hezbollah proxies, and we can't just hope that its next aerial assault will be unsuccessful. No nation can live under such a threat. And if Iran is further emboldened, it will invite the very regional conflict Biden is desperate to avoid. A devastating response is required, and Israel must have our unwavering support. What the columnist said: Iran's aerial barrage was an impressive and terrifying sight, said Jason Rezaian in the Washington Post. But it sent a message of weakness, not strength. It was thwarted with apparent ease and struck not a single meaningful target. Either Tehran, which took pains to telegraph the attack, pulled its punches, or it tried to land a body blow and failed. Either way, it signals that Iran, its economy crippled by sanctions, is in no position to fight a direct, protracted war. Those downplaying the attack as a symbolic show of force are denying reality, said Frieda Gittes in CNN.com. With a miraculous display of military technology, Israel got lucky this time. But it's impossible to overstate just how cataclysmic Iran's attack could have been, and what could have been unleashed. The sight of intercepted missiles exploding above the Temple Mount and other holy sites drives home the potential danger. And what if those missiles and drones had carried nuclear material? The most urgently needed action right now is not in the Middle East, but in Washington, said David Frum in The Atlantic. In their bid to block desperately needed aid for Ukraine, MAGA Republicans have also repeatedly thwarted Biden's effort to help Israel bear the immense costs of its self-defensive war in Gaza. Israel's dazzling air defense comes with a high price tag, and Johnson must find a way to push through assistance that's been delayed too long. This is no time to telegraph a lack of U.S. resolve, said Elliot A. Cohen, also in The Atlantic. Iran's sudden willingness to attack Israel directly after decades of proxy warfare is ominous. It's been emboldened by a burgeoning coalition with Russia, China, and North Korea, an axis united in the goal of overthrowing, quote, the American-led world order, unquote. They share a belief that their moment is coming when a divided and indecisive West will prove vulnerable. Until Iran pays a visible and heavy price for its creeping aggression, the problem will only get worse. What next? Israel faces a quandary, said David Ignatius in the Washington Post. Despite pleas from Biden and other world leaders, Israeli officials have resolved that to deter further aggression, they must retaliate. But as they weigh their choices, they're wondering how to send a, quote, hard-nosed message, unquote, without escalating the crisis and risking all-out war. Israel has a range of options, said Jack Deitch in the Foreign Policy. The most aggressive and risky would be a strike aimed at Iran's nuclear program. A step down would be an attack on another high-value target on Iranian soil, which might include military sites, weapons, depots, and top military leaders, or even the headquarters of an elite Revolutionary Guard. Among the least provocative options are targeted strikes against military commanders or Iran-backed militias outside Iran, or a cyber attack against Tehran, which would inflict humiliation without bloodshed. Israel likely has to respond, said Jonathan Lord of the Center for a New American Security, but they don't need to rush. It's historic first. Trump goes on trial in hush money case. What happened? The first ever criminal trial of a former U.S. president began jury selection in a Manhattan courtroom this week, with Donald Trump calling the charges that he falsified records to cover up a hush money payment, quote, political persecution, unquote, and, quote, election interference, unquote. The trial centers on a 2016 payment of $130,000 made by Trump fixer Michael Cohen to porn star Stormy Daniels, which prosecutors say was intended to cover up her 2006 sexual encounter with Trump. Asked whether they could be impartial about the former president, many prospective jurors said they could not and were released. Others were struck from the jury pool for their past social media posts, including one man who had posted, "Lock him up." While Trump appeared to doze off during the proceedings several times, he took interest in the juror questioning, at one point grumbling and gesturing at one woman. That prompted a rebuke from Judge Juan Merchan, who said sharply, quote, "I will not have any jurors intimidated," unquote. Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg filed a motion to hold Trump in contempt of court, saying he had violated a gag order against commenting on trial participants in a Truth Social post calling Daniels and Cohen, quote, two sleazebags, unquote, and in earlier posts attacking Merchant's daughter, a Democratic consultant. Outside the courtroom, Trump said that the trial schedule would interfere with his presidential campaigning. "This is a persecution like never before," he said, "a case that should never have been brought." After the proceedings one day this week, he stopped at a Harlem bodega that had been robbed in 2022. Bragg and his staff aren't going after robbers and murderers, he said there. They go after Trump. What the editorial said: never before has a former and possibly future president been a criminal defendant, said the New York Times. It's a momentous occasion, and the proceedings are already demonstrating the great care and respect exercised by every participant except Trump. Merchan has given Trump lawyers extra time to review records and has excluded evidence that could bias jurors, such as the sexual assault allegations against him. That doesn't sound like the unfair and politically motivated prosecution Trump insists is happening. "Don't pretend politics aren't involved," said the Wall Street Journal. "Paying hush money isn't a crime. Bragg's complaint is about the paperwork. His reasoning that for the 34 felony charges is a legal stretch, which explains why neither federal prosecutors nor his predecessor as DA brought charges. Now the case is being tried in Manhattan, where Trump received barely 12% of the 2020 vote, and where jurors are likely to favor him. This trial is making history, all right, but in the worst way." What the columnist said: "Let's stop calling this a hush money case," said Norman Eason in CNN.com. "The issue isn't the payments themselves, but why Trump made them. Bragg's team intends to prove that Trump falsified financial documents by calling his reimbursement of Cohen legal fees because he wanted to unlawfully influence the election. That violates campaign finance laws. Further, Trump and Cohen, the prosecution contends, began buying salacious stories and then burying them in order to deprive voters of information that could have influenced their choice. That's election interference. It's still the shakiest case against Trump, said Ruth Marcus in the Washington Post. There could be potential federal crimes here, but Bragg employed creative reasoning to claim jurisdiction. And Cohen, a convicted criminal and serial perjurer, will be a defense lawyer's dream. A single skeptic could hang the jury. And if Trump gets off, it would further fuel his claims that every charge against him, even those involving the plot to overturn the 2020 election, is a fabrication by partisan Democrats. Whatever the outcome, this trial will matter, said Noah Rothman in National Review. Prison time is highly unlikely, but election could be at stake. While polling suggests many voters agree with Trump's contention that he's being persecuted, a majority say they're unwilling to vote for him if convicted. Trump has embraced the role of martyr, said Timothy L. O'Brien in Bloomberg, telling supporters at a rally last week that the trial was a sham, but he was proud to do it for you. But the reality is, he's on trial because he may have committed a crime, and he's being held accountable. In our briefing this week, bird flu's evolving threat. Avian influenza is starting to spread among cattle and other mammals. Could it become a human pandemic? How dangerous is bird flu? The H5N1 strain circulating around the world is, for birds and other animals, the deadliest avian flu outbreak on record. First detected in China in 1996, it has ripped its way around the world, killing hundreds of millions of domestic and wild birds. More than 90% of chickens infected with H5N1 die within 48 hours. By the time the virus showed up in North America in 2021, it had evolved to become even more contagious. A highly pathogenic variant has now been detected on every continent apart from Australia and in more 100 different bird species, including migratory waterfowl that keep the virus circulating. The culling of more than 85 million captive birds in the U.S. over the past 2 years has failed to halt the spread, with the disease now showing up in numerous mammal species, including cows. Earlier this month, a Texas dairy worker who had close contact with sick cattle tested positive for H5N1, becoming the first person to have contracted it from a mammal, raising fears the virus could spark a human pandemic. The Centers for Disease Control says H5N1 currently poses a, quote, low, unquote, threat to people because it cannot spread efficiently among humans. But that risk level, said epidemiologist Michael Osterholm, could change in a heartbeat with additional mutations. Is the disease widespread in mammals? It's been detected in nearly 50 species, including mountain lions, bobcats, and polar bears. The virus has also caused mass die-offs among seals, sea lions, and farmed mink. And since March, it has been found in cattle in more than half a dozen states. So far, the variant has been spotted only in dairy cattle, not those raised for beef, and appears to cause only mild illness. Infected cows lose their appetite, and what little milk they produce is thick and discolored. The animals seem to recover. The cattle may have initially caught the bug from exposure to wild bird droppings or from contaminated feed. The FDA allows a ground-up chicken feces to be fed to cows, but evidence is mounting that H5N1 is now spreading inside herds. Such mammal-to-mammal transmission puts H5N1 one step closer to being spread to among humans. Genetic sequencing of the virus in the Texas patient revealed one mutation that improves its ability to replicate inside mammals. But there's no evidence yet that the variant has adapted to spread efficiently among humans. Still, the Texas case should serve as a warning, said virologist Angie Rasmussen. The less human or cow transmission we have, the fewer of these mutations the virus can acquire. How does bird flu affect people? The two U.S. cases to date have been mild. A prison inmate who caught the virus while killing infected birds at a Colorado farm in 2022 suffered only fatigue. The Texas patient's sole symptom was pink eye. To catch the disease, a person typically needs to inhale massive amounts of the virus, which might happen while sweeping up infected fecal matter, for example. That's because the protein the current strain uses to penetrate cells does not attach easily to the receptors in the human nose, throat, or upper lungs, which would allow it to lock in and start pumping out copies of itself. Still, infections do happen, and once the virus reaches the lower lungs, it can be fatal. Some 900 people worldwide have been diagnosed with H5N1 over the past two decades, and about half have died. And the sheer scale of this outbreak gives the virus plenty of opportunity to evolve and potentially to gain the ability to breach defenses in the human upper respiratory tract or become more transmittable through coughs or sneezes. Some mammalian species may be suitable genetic mixing vessels to create a human pandemic strain, said epidemiologist Rihanna McIntyre. But even without human-to-human spread, the virus has hammered the poultry industry and added to consumers' pain at the grocery store. What's the economic damage? The Agriculture Department has spent more than $1 billion so far in compensating farmers for culled flocks and on measures to suppress the disease. Agricultural economists estimate the industry has suffered another $1 billion in damages from lost sales. Infections in culls took out nearly a third of egg-laying hens in 2022. That, in turn, caused prices to soar for consumers. A dozen eggs sold for a nationwide average of $4.82 in early 2023, more than double a price a year earlier. Egg prices have since dipped sharply, but this month the nation's largest egg producer, Cal-Maine Foods, announced it had to cull nearly 2 million hens at its Palmer County, Texas plant following a bird flu outbreak. Can the disease be contained? There are several licensed bird flu vaccines, and countries including China, Egypt, and Mexico now inoculate poultry. But the U.S. Department of Agriculture is hesitant to follow suit. The vaccine formulas are chasing a constantly evolving threat, and none is tailored precisely to the current strain. Vaccination could also hurt exports. Many countries refuse to accept meat from inoculated chickens, arguing the immune response to vaccination is so similar to an infection that it's impossible to tell a safe bird from a virus carrier. Some experts say the only fix is to rethink poultry farming and to stop cramming tens of thousands of birds engineered to be as homogeneous and teeteringly plump as possible into metal barns. Such a densely packed space is the perfect environment for a virus to spread and evolve quickly. It's a man-made problem, said pathologist Thijs Kuiken in Erasmus University in the Netherlands. We're knowingly risking our own lives by allowing this kind of system to continue as it is. Beware of pigs. There's one farm animal that virologists hope never becomes a major carrier of H5N1. Pigs. The animals are common intermediary host for bird viruses that eventually plague humans. And viruses can swap genes inside a pig's body to form more infectious hybrids. The 1918 influenza pandemic, which killed at least 50 million people worldwide, is thought to have originated on a Kansas hog farm. And in 2009, simultaneous human and bird flu infections in pigs at one Mexico facility combined to spawn H1N1, better known as swine flu. So far, H5N1 has infected pigs only sporadically, but a recent USDA study demonstrated the virus can spread hog to hog. When you mix those two viruses in the swine, what pops out could be all swine, or a little human and swine, or a little avian and swine, or a little of all three, said virologist Eric Weaver. And you never know, you might get the perfect combination. In our best columns in the U.S. this week, The Many Reasons for Optimism by Matthew Yglesias and slowboring.com. We're living in the best of times, said Matthew Yglesias. That statement might puzzle Americans caught in a constant doom loop of apocalyptic warnings about climate change, crime, poverty, health, and global conflict. But humanity has always faced serious problems, and in 2024, Americans are living what is indisputably one of the richest countries on the planet at a time of unprecedented global prosperity. After the pandemic, the U.S. economy bounced back vigorously. Unemployment is at historic lows, while wealth and wages have grown most rapidly at the bottom. The murder rate has fallen 3 years in a row. After falling during COVID, U.S. life expectancy is rising again. Climatologists now say the worst-case scenarios for climate change are unlikely as the world moves in fits and starts toward renewable energy. Global poverty has been a steep decline for decades. Why don't people feel more optimistic? News media, social media, and partisan activists tend to focus on the negative because alarm and outrage generate clicks and engagement. But rather than wallow in ineffectual misery, we should log off, take action to make this a better world, and feel some gratitude for how good life already is. Well, that's it for this week. This is Terry Malloy wishing you all a great week ahead. I'll be back next Sunday to read the week.